who represent women and working people are still here, and we're going to keep fighting.
We've been speaking with Jennifer Reich, legal director at the group Equal Rights Advocates. Find them online at equalrights.org. Jennifer Reich, thank you so much for joining us this week on Counterspin.
Thank you, Janine.
And that's it for Counterspin for this week. Counterspin is produced by FAIR, the National Media Watch Group based in New York. For more information, you can check out our website, fair.org. The show's engineered by Alex Noyes. I'm Janine Jackson. Thanks for listening to Counterspin.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. All community radio, all the time.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Underground Grad School. Classes that begin in April include Talking Across the Political Chasm, Facebook Marketing, Reading Ta-Nehisi Coates, How to Train, Getting Serious About Being a Learning Organization, and more. Portland Underground Grad School is also known as PUGS. Classes take place all over the Portland metro area. Information about registering, teaching classes, and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the screening of Food Chains, The Revolution in America's Fields, taking place Friday, April 14th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church in Portland. Food Chains is a documentary film about the group of Florida farm workers and their Fair Food Program, who partner with growers and retailers to improve working conditions for farm laborers in the United States. Screening will be followed by a panel discussion with Licia Anderson of the Western Farm Workers Association and Ramon Ramirez of PECUN. Again, the screening of Food Chains, The Revolution in America's Fields is taking place Friday, April 14th at 7 p.m. at the First Unitarian Church, 1121 Southwest Main Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Welcome to Bread and Roses, feminist news and public affairs on the KBOO airwaves since 1978, the longest-running feminist radio broadcast program in the country. Bread and Roses is a collective of women and non-binary radio activists who give voice to those in global and local spaces working for social justice and equity, and we strive to challenge systems of oppression. All this and we have fun. I'm your host tonight, Cheryl Green. Our engineer is Adam. PSU Professor Jeff Kahn and I are talking today about women's and men's voices and the different ways they're perceived and judged, especially around vocal fry, or what he describes as using a creaky voice. Here's a little bit of vocal coach Ken Taylor creaking to warm you up to the sound we'll be talking about today. Interestingly, when I went on YouTube to look for examples of a creaky voice for you, most of the demonstrations were from men, but there was a range of genders of people you could easily find who attack the sound of this voice and the people who use it. While Jeff and I personally include cis women, trans women, and people who identify as or are perceived as women or femme or feminine, under the term women, there's one thing I want to point out. The research and pop culture references we talk about are probably only referring to cis women when they say women, and cis men when they say men. And so we are sticking to these umbrella terms in our conversation as well. But we recognize the importance and value of naming that these terms are not inclusive, nor are they always accurate descriptions of people. And when it comes to talking about voice and non-binary genders, there's a lot more to talk about. And we don't really touch on that part today. Here's Jeff in his sociolinguistics class just a couple of weeks ago as he sets up a big debate that he ends on each term he teaches this course.
The debate here is really a question about this phenomenon called vocal fry or glottal fry or creaky voice, and that we are choosing sides based on if this is a difference, meaning that speech-language pathologists should not be treating this as a disorder, or if it is a disorder and speech-language pathologists should be treating this as a disorder and providing services. All right, so the main question here is difference versus disorder, which is a question that we should always ask in any sort of clinical setting in order to make sure we provide the appropriate services for our clients. Are we ready?
Jeff Kahn is a PSU professor in the Speech and Hearing Sciences Department who's also got a PhD in linguistics and a master's in teaching English to speakers of other languages. We met after his class's debate, and I want to apologize for my timing. I caught Jeff right as he was getting a cold, so in our conversation, his voice is deeper and a little rougher than usual.
I consider myself a teacher or educator over an academic. Mostly because I haven't gone the tenure track route. I did a dissertation for my PhD, but I did not do publications or further research. My heart is in teaching students and training future speech-language pathologists to be critical thinkers and evaluators of the world is my goal.
I would like us to take a moment. Are you white?
Yes.
Okay, I'm white too, and I would like us to acknowledge that we're white in this recording.
I'm white, cisgendered, not heterosexual, male, not Christian, probably just middle class. And people would consider me abled, I guess.
And I'm white, cisgender, straight, woman, neurodivergent. But I do think it's important when we're talking about speech and language and dialect that we acknowledge that we are white and we're talking about it.
Another quick note. What I didn't manage to get on tape was Jeff pointing out something extremely important, so let me say it for him here. As a cisgender man, he works very hard to be intentional in how he observes people and communication, and how he expresses opinions about those observations. He's well aware that he has no first-hand experience having his voice monitored, judged, and policed in the ways he talks about in the episode. So while he speaks with some authority from his training and teaching background, from research and studying other people's research, and from hearing countless stories from women he knows very well about how they are constantly under critique, he's not speaking for women. As we talked, I never felt like he was telling me who I am or what I go through so much as he was holding up this mirror and reflecting back to me the painful and ridiculous realities of inequity. I asked Jeff to start with a bit of a technical definition of what we're looking at today.
It is the lower end of the pitch range when your vocal folds are relaxed and vibrating slowly so that you hear the individual vibrations, sort of like a door creaking. Yes, that. I can't actually do it very well. Not very loudly.
Yeah. How come when you do it, you can only do it quietly? Do you know?
Because I'm not a frequent user of it, so I'm not very practiced with it. And I think in order for me to do it intentionally, I have to really relax my vocal folds and I don't get enough air support, so it can't get very loud. They did a study, they looked at this in Seattle. It's sometimes hard for the measurements to pick up because the vibrations are so slow in between, sometimes they're called pulses, and it's looking for a measurement of air pressure disturbance, which is what vocal fold vibration is. So vocal fry or creaky voice is the lower frequency of speech, which we interpret as lower pitch. I can also tell you physiologically what it means is that your vocal folds in non- creaky voice and non-falsetto voice and our regular modal voicing, they are open and closed for the same amount of time. With creaky voice, your vocal folds are closed 90% of the time and open 10% of the cycle. we hear a longer period of time where there's no air coming out.
So how did you get interested in vocal fry in particular?
First, I think we should say that my opinions don't necessarily reflect the opinions of the university, so I'm just speaking from my own self, not for Portland State or our department as a whole. I learned about it first through a linguistic phonetics class, and we call it creaky voice. People in a lot of different languages, like some dialects of Chinese, use that as instead of voiced or voiceless. So we have a voiced sound like a Z, zip, and we have a voiceless sound like an S, sip. And in English, if it's voiced or voiceless, it makes an important distinction so we know which sound that is. And other languages have voiced like zip, they would have voiceless like sip, and then they would have another word, zip, which is more creaky. I didn't do it very well. Just another mode of vibration for our vocal folds, and a lot of languages use that very naturally, very typically, and it is not a disorder in those languages. So when I started hearing about vocal fry, glottal fry, first I thought, what is that? And when I started going through some of our courses in voice disorders and speech disorders, they kept bringing this thing up about vocal fry, and I kept hearing examples, and I said, that's just creaky voice. How is that a disorder? Like, I know it's not a disorder in the speakers that use it every day, like we use voiced and voiceless, so why is it a disorder? And then the debate about whether this was an actual disorder that should be treated through voice therapy or if it was just a difference, an accent, dialect difference, kind of hit the mainstream. I don't know when that happened, maybe within the last 5 years. Whenever the general population gets excited about something that I consider linguistic or speech and hearing sciences, I get excited because this is what I love.
I hadn't heard that background. I only know the part about either that it's a disorder or that it's a difference, but it's terrible. But if you think about, like you gave the example, zip and sip from English, if I were to say it with a creak in my voice, it wouldn't change it into a third word. So in some languages, it does change the meaning of what you're saying, but in English, like if I just fry like this, it doesn't change the meaning, yet it changes your attitude.
Yeah, I think it's Cantonese, has four tones. They're a tonal language, so you can have the sequence of an M plus an A, ma, and if you say it with different pitches, it means something different. And I believe one of their pitches, the lower pitch, includes creaky voice, and that's part of that system. So they would do something like ma, 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 ma. And it just means a different word. Pitch doesn't operate that way in English. Therefore, also glottal fry or creaky voice doesn't operate that way in English. So we put extra linguistic stuff on it. So that's where it doesn't change the meaning of a word. It changes someone's, how they feel about what they're saying, emotion or attitude towards something. It's the, sometimes we call paralinguistic or extra-linguistic, super-linguistic information that we do have in language. It's our opinions, our beliefs, our dislikes are coming through via the pitch we use, via the creak we use. But that doesn't mean it doesn't have function. It's just not the same as Z versus S, sip and zip. That functions to keep things separate to make different words. This other function is very social.
Yeah.
And that's important.
And yet people talk about it as if it's a hard and fast rule. It is just wrong. Why do we act like it's not this thing that's emotional or cultural, but that it's this rule, that it's a terrible, bad thing?
Yeah. I think it has to do with how we're trained, socialized to think about language, that it's correct or incorrect, that it's not variable, that it's not changing, that it's not, that there is one way you're supposed to speak. And from that sort of very prescriptive mindset, we become, I think, less tolerant and accepting of differences, especially in a narcissistic way. If you speak differently than me, one of us is wrong. And I don't want to be wrong, so therefore you're wrong. So I think it comes from that mindset. It's interesting to think about this sort of political correctness that we've sort of embraced as a culture, some more than others, and this idea of celebrate diversity, except when it comes to language. Like you can be as mean and hateful talking about someone's language, but you can't do that about their skin color, their gender identity, there's still a wrong or right about language.
Yeah, language and speech and pronunciation.
I don't think people understand the implications of their judgment about language is really judgment about people. I mean, you've shared with me clips from various places where people are basically saying, I won't date someone who can't spell correctly. Why? I mean, just why? Like, why is spelling correctly so important to someone that it's on the top of their list of potential partners? Like, hasn't everyone misspelled something at some point in their lives? I don't understand that. And I think vocal fry, which we will start to call creaky voice now, is just another phenomenon. It's just another part of how some people talk and some people don't. When you come right down to it, when you ask someone, why is this wrong? The only justification that you can get to in the end is that they just don't like it.
Right. Anytime we start to get into the right and wrong, I'm pronouncing this right, you're pronouncing it wrong, we don't stop and investigate, am I really the norm and the standard? Like, is this universally what humans, all humans the globe over, are supposed to do, and you, one person, yeah, are wrong?
There's sort of this myth from a linguistic perspective that everyone has an accent but me. And I've met a lot of people who grew up in the South or even New York City, not as much in the sort of 21st century, but before the internet, essentially, when we didn't have exposure to different accents. There are lots of stories, especially around the Vietnam War, of people in these, what a lot of Americans will recognize, a really strong accent. They didn't know they had a strong accent until they went into war, typically for men at that time, because they had never encountered someone from outside of their own area. So that's when they realized they had an accent. Everyone technically has an accent. That's just how you talk. And whether that includes upspeak or whether that includes a little fry, that's part of the way that you talk.
There's so many implications around race and class, too, when you start talking about regional accents or cultural, just culturally based accents. And the way that there can be a point of pride in identifying with the accent or dialect that you grew up with. Okay, so I got to come to hear the first half of your PSU class's debate,
yes,
over is vocal fry a difference or is it a disorder? And that was fascinating to listen to, but I only was there for the first half. So who won, difference or disorder?
In some respects, I feel like all of the students felt like everyone won and everyone lost. From the beginning, they were really uncomfortable with those sides because they already knew enough to realize it's not that clear cut. And I sort of forced them into those sort of extreme sides because that's the point of a debate. But none of them really liked it. And some of them actually ended up on a side that they really didn't believe in, but they didn't let that show. I don't know. It's hard to say who won. It was interesting because they made different points than have been made in the past. One was the definition of a disorder, and including from the WHO model, the idea that a disorder is something that disrupts your life and it disrupts your ability to participate in society, and the studies that have shown that creaky voice users actually are treated poorer in the job market, they classified it as a disorder because of that disruption. And I think that was a pretty brilliant way to do that. The difference side spent a lot more time talking about the gender issue, which is that more women are judged more harshly about this particular thing than men, even though I believe empirically it's been found that men and women both do this. It's not just 20-year-old women that are doing this. I just did it now. Men do it a lot, but they don't get called out for it, and frankly, people actually don't notice it as much.
We have the wonderful example from Katie Mingle, who is on 99% Invisible. She gets so many people writing in to complain about the women's voices, the women reporters and producers, that she's just got this auto reply she gives to everyone. She doesn't even have to look at them. She said no one ever complains about the male voices, and I've heard male reporters and producers on that show who fry, like, start to finish, not just, you know, at the end of your sentence, but constant fry. What? So what? What do you think this is? Where do you think that particular gender bias? Unpack all of misogyny for me, if you would.
there's so much here. I mean, your voice is a little bit different than maybe having an accent, like the way you might say your vowels, or whether you say kitten or kitten, whether you say bottle or bottle or bottle. Those sort of sound changes go noticed for some part, especially if it's R, like in New York City, or if it's R in British English. But I think that doesn't become so much of a gender thing. But when it comes to the upspeak, the intonation, and when it comes to like vocal quality, those things I think are so tied up in that extra linguistic, the emotion and the attitude and a lot of the other stuff outside of language, that people think it should be different. So why women? Well, I mean, I think you can ask that about almost anything. Women, I think, are frequently more policed than men in terms of their behaviors. It doesn't mean just language behavior, but any kind of behavior. So in some respects, I think women are paid more attention to than men in our culture in terms of what they shouldn't do. But in other respects, I think men are paid more attention than women in terms of how much money they should make and what are the values we should have often come from what are typically masculine, white, cisgender, Christian, heterosexual men. Like, those are the value systems that we're all trying to adopt instead of celebrating diversity. One of the questions I want people to ask themselves when they really are speaking negatively about creaky voice and a particular user is, what do they think the function is? Most aspects of language have a function. They're doing something. Language-wise, it's not just doing something to annoy you. There's been a little bit of research out there that I'm not too familiar with, but a lot of creaky voicing happens toward the end of sentences, as our pitch for every speaker in declarative sentences, which are sentences that are statements of fact, that you know this to be true. Obama was a very, very frequent user of this pitch drop after every single sentence. Do this, then do this, then do this. And that's a very declarative, I know what I'm talking about, this is a fact, not hesitant kind of thing. And so as we think about our pitch lowering at the end, and in sort of combination with a lot of words and maybe a lot of breath has been exposed, that creaking at the end is kind of like a punctuation point to say, I know what I'm talking about. You have to pay a little bit more attention to the end of the sentence because I'm getting quieter and I'm getting lower in pitch. This means I know what I'm talking about. And so I think the reaction to women is that women in our culture are not supposed to know what they're talking about. So how dare they use this form that indicates they know anything about what they're saying? I think that's a big reaction that people have to it. And I find it interesting that a lot of people say, oh, women with creaky voice sound less confident.
Yeah.
I think women in general can't win. When they sound more confident, they're basically adopting something that men have used to indicate assertiveness and assurance in what they're talking about. And I'm not saying that they have to do this to sound like they know what they're talking about, but when they do it, the pushback is, no, they're not confident. Because how can you be confident and know what you're talking about as a woman? You can't. So that it makes me a little upset that women get policed in that way.
Yeah.
And men do not.
Yeah.
It's very sexist.
Yes, it is very sexist indeed. I'm slightly holding back this crying sensation, the water in my, just to hear you affirm it. I remember that point that some of your students made about, well, we have to call it a disorder because they are having social consequences, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's something that I love about the World Health Organization, but most of the people in this country don't use the World Health Organization. We still operate under this medical model of you seem inferior or broken. And I'm not going to examine my bias against you. It's just that there's something wrong with you. You're wrong, like you were saying before.
I'm very interested in the voice aspect of speech-language pathology, but I've never done therapy. And I've probably only had maybe a couple of classes, but at the graduate level, only one class. I kind of have a cold right now, and a lot of people describe someone with a cold as a little bit nasal, when in fact, it's the exact opposite of nasal. You are not nasal because you have stuff in your nose and sound can't make it through as loud, so you're not nasal. Yet people use the term nasal to mean too much nasal and too little nasal. So it just means nasal wrong is what it means when someone uses nasal. So vocal fry means voice wrong, or breathy or strained. It just means voice wrong to the everyday population. They're saying they don't like something, but I wish they would just say they don't like it, because that's truthful and that's genuine. And there are certainly aspects of language and sometimes people's voices, you just don't like them. But I don't judge them for that. It's my own thing. It's whether I like something or not. It's not their fault that I don't like their voice. And I just wish people would own up to that.
It would be so much easier.
Just say you don't like it. Don't say it's wrong.
Say that. So, okay. Yeah. So while we're on this, let's bring up the actor Lake Bell, who, by the way, oh my gosh, I don't even know where to start. Here's what's so ironic. She takes a really hard line against sexy baby boys and upspeak. And she just wants all women who do that to stop. They are bad representatives of women for talking like that. Intriguingly, she basically talks like this all the time. So she's got almost no breath support and she fries nonstop. And I'm listening to her judge women. And on Conan O'Brien's show, and we'll play this clip, you know, they were clear to distinguish it's only some women she's against, but she is using the exact same argument against them that everybody else is using against her, which is so ironic.
You have a bone to pick with the way women speak today, is that right?
I do.
Or some women?
Some women, not everyone, but I don't want to get on my soapbox here, but I'm going to get on my soapbox. There is a pandemic that is rampant in this country, and it's the sexy baby vocal virus. It's girls who talk like that and adopt that, but it's not their fault.
You mean like grown women
grown
that talk that?
Grown women, and yeah. It's they're victimized, they have fallen prey to something.
Yeah.
And it's two things, right? So it's pitch, right? So it's talking really high, and then it's also the affectation, which is the fry and up talking. So it's festering through this great nation, and it could be our demise.
Well, what a lovely thought.
And she said women, that they are victimized and forced into talking this way. I just...
And in the very beginning, I think she says she doesn't blame them.
And yet...
Yet.
She doesn't blame them because they're just poor, helpless victims.
Yes.
You know, as we women are. How do we convince her to take it down a couple notches here?
I don't know if we will ever change her mind. But sometimes I like to do what I call a why war, where I just keep asking why after everything they say until they break down. Because I imagine if you just ask her why do they do this? Well, because they've been taught to do this. Well, why are they taught to do this? What would her answer be there? Or, you know, why should they stop doing this? What would her answer be there? I mean, in the end, I think she just doesn't like it.
Yeah.
And I think she has put her own view of what it means for women to sound like this, that it means that they're passive and they're what else does she say? Passive.
They're victims.
The baby, the sexy baby voice. Her term is indicating that there's too much sex, too much baby, which is kind of, you know, it's a gross thing to think about the combination of those two things. But that's her impression of it. If you're going to point fingers, it's like, she's the gross one. She's the one that thinks it's a sexy baby. And I'm, yeah, so I, the other side of it is the part of the debate that I liked and didn't like, that we talked about how the students classified a disorder as something that affects someone's life, but turning it around, it only affects someone's life because other people see it as wrong. So your behavior that doesn't get you the job because it's viewed as wrong from someone else doesn't mean that we should pathologize that behavior. And so I think that's what she's doing. She's pathologizing this behavior, almost mm-hmm. like a virus. She calls it a virus.
She does. She's
a virus spreading like that, no one has control over it. She also is not just an actress, and so she probably has had training to take those things out of her own voice if they ever existed, which is why she probably presents with a deeper voice. I think that's sort of the desire for women in the public, on radio. I notice a lot of women hosts on radio shows have a little bit deeper voices. And again, they're making the box very confined for women's voices, policing it, by saying you can't have too high of a pitch, you can't have too low of a pitch and creak. You have to have kind of a medium to low pitch voice for people to take you seriously, And you end up with this very small pitch range that women are supposed to use in the media to sound authoritative.
Yeah.
And then anything outside of that, which is probably where most of the normal women's ranges are, isn't taken seriously. So essentially, women just aren't taken seriously no matter how they sound. And then they're victimized and they are judged very harshly for using other kinds of voices. We should just accept all women's voices as is.
Yes.
And celebrate the difference. That's what the diversity thing is, yeah. Instead of trying to confine people to meet a certain average.
In the New Yorker article, Lake Bell said that she specifically speaks lower than her natural voice, especially when she's on a panel with a lot of dudes. But it's so interesting to me because when I hear her voice, I don't hear a low voice, I just hear a creak. So like mine, before I went to voice therapy, this is how I talked. So this kind of really throaty, low pitch, but it's not fry, it's just low. And I hear Lake Bell describe herself as speaking lower, and I think, sort of, but you've gone down into this creek, which makes you really quiet too.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people who are against that use of vocal fry, that they feel like you sound sick or weak or unsure of yourself. There's the people who think it sounds confident, then there's the people who think it sounds weak and sick and lazy and apathetic.
Yeah. But one of the studies that my students brought up on both sides was a perceptual study asking a range of listeners to evaluate creaky voice in women and to figure out, does it sound confident or not? And this was something having effect the job market. Basically, the younger listeners found creaky voice to be confident. The older listeners found it to be less confident. And that's language change. The older listeners are probably less likely to do it themselves and to hear it less in their peers. Therefore, they associate it with the young. Younger folks associate it with their peers and they probably use it. Therefore, it sounds confident to them.
Yeah.
And it's really all about perspective, not it's wrong or right. Language change happens and no one really likes it. I mean, when those creaky voice speakers who are now 25 get to be 70, and something else is happening for the 25-year-olds, they're not going to like that either. But that's how language works.
Yeah, yeah. That's interesting. I should stop being angry at my dad for saying Oregon.
my dad says Italy, and I have corrected him, and he's probably the only person left on the planet that I try to correct their English, because I just find that to be insulting.
Italy? Yeah.
Italy. I just don't like that. It just sounds, in the end, when you ask me why, it's like, I just don't like it. It sounds wrong.
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean it is wrong. It's just, I don't like it.
Yeah. Same thing with Oregon.
Yeah.
I don't like it. I don't like that.
If you're just tuning in, this is Bread and Roses on KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM. I'm your host, Cheryl Green, and I'm talking to PSU professor Jeff Kahn about vocal fry or creaky voice. Like this. This is my creaky voice. Before we get back to our conversation, I'm going to play some Britney Spears for you. Britney is famous for making a creaky voice popular in white pop music, and she's credited with using it long before it became a household term. In Oops, I Did It Again, she manages to keep her volume up the whole time while moving quickly back and forth between creak and a very high pitch. Check it out. Whether you like creaks and fries or not, listen with an open mind.
Did it again. I made you believe we're more than just friends. Oh baby, it might seem like a crush, but it doesn't mean that I'm serious. 'Cause to lose all my senses, that is just so typically me. Oh baby,
dreaming away, wishing that he truly exist. I cry watching the days. Can't you see I'm a fool in so many ways? But to lose all my senses, that is just so typically me. Baby, oh, I did it again. I played with your heart. Got lost in the game. Oh, baby, baby, oops, you think I'm in love. And I'm sent from above. I'm not that innocent.
Just before the break, we were talking about this nearly irresistible urge to want to correct people who pronounce things in ways we don't like. If we don't like how someone talks, we just want them to be wrong and to be quiet. We started talking about how performer Lake Bell's form of feminism is to tell women to talk in a more woman-like way, which for her sometimes means talking with a voice quality usually associated more with men's voices.
The linguistics professor from Stanford, Penny Eckert, I would like to see a conversation between her and Lake Bell. Because Penny Eckert says, you know what? Rather than lowering your voice to fit in with the dudes or whatever your goal is for changing your voice, that women, nobody should have to change their voices to suit society, that we need to change the way we listen, which is basically what you've been saying the whole time. But I've now one-upped you by citing a woman who says the same
excellent.
Thing.
Excellent, good.
So now it's valid. Right?
I have met Dr. Eckert, and she's a brilliant researcher, and she's a very thoughtful person. And if you want to read a linguist's and a good citizen of the world's perspective about language and language change, especially with women, anything that she writes about is great. She is within the sort of sociolinguistic side of the field, but she was more anthropological, and her sort of primary original work was based on her basically interacting with high school students for the period of maybe 2 to 3 years. So she has a very keen insight, I think, into young people, even though that was a little while ago. I want to make sure that we make it clear that we're not making fun of the way Lake Bell talks.
Oh,
but
no.
We're reacting to the words that she says and how she speaks about other people. And sometimes it's not people's opinions. It's sort of the hypocrisy of it all, that I'm going to judge other people and not hold myself up to the same standards that I hold other people to. So I think that's my reaction to what she's saying.
Yeah.
I mean, her voice is her voice, and I think that's important to recognize.
Yeah, it is. I'm glad you said it. And I'm just going to come out. I don't like her voice. But I can hear more voice in what she's using. So what I don't like is that I can hear that she uses very little breath support. And so my mirror neurons catch on fire. And I watch her and I listen to her. And I start like pushing my abdominal muscles to get the air out. So I have this visceral reaction to her. I don't think that how she speaks is wrong. I don't particularly like that really low pitch quiet. It's hard for me to hear.
Yeah.
But I'm with you that my judgment doesn't come from, wow, Lake Bell, you need to change your voice, so much as take a step back and recognize that the things that people say about vocal fry and women who use it, you are saying those same things against this other group of women.
Yeah.
Can we address misogyny instead of trying to Sheryl Sandberg everything?
I don't know what that means.
Oh, Sheryl.
Is that like blaming women instead of sexism?
It is. Okay. Yeah. I mean, I just made Sheryl Sandberging into a verb. It's really this.
You verbed it.
I verbed it. The CEO of Facebook who came up with that lean in concept, that women, if you want to get somewhere in the world, lean into being more aggressive and assertive and claim your space at the table with the men. Yeah, I don't like your table. I don't even want to sit at your table. So, I had a podcast episode where we ended up just, but you know what? Chop it down and burn the table out in the fire pit, and we're going to all sit on the floor. Before I had my vocal fold surgery to have the cyst removed, I had a very distinct voice. I basically described it as Kirstie Alley after a few cigars was how I sounded. Although nowadays, I don't know if anybody would know what that reference is. Because that was 10 years ago.
Maybe Samantha from Sex and the City after a few cigars? Very breathy?
No. Like extraordinarily hoarse and breathy?
Kathleen Turner.
Wait, that's even older reference. Anyway, suffice it to say, my voice was extremely low-pitched, extremely hoarse, and it would cut in and out. Like, the voice would just stop, because the cyst was getting in the way and the vocal cords didn't close. One of my classmates came up to me after class one day. She said, you know, listening to you talk today, Cheryl, you actually are nice.
What?
And of course, I had to do the dutiful fawning woman thing and say thank you and walk away and cry. The harshness and low, deep raspiness of my voice was being read by her and probably others as, what a harsh lady who only has harsh things to say. It was really interesting.
In my dissertation study, I was looking at the Philadelphia accent, which is a very strong and unique accent. It's beautiful. And I also looked at the perception of that accent. And what I found through a very complex methodology was that women's voices tended to be rated on scales regarding sort of friendship and correctness, and men's voices were more on sort of masculinity, femininity, toughness. Everybody had the opportunity to rate men and women on all four scales, but the women were only significant when it came to friends and sort of job correctness, whereas the men's were only toughness and masculinity. So it's almost like women are expected to be friendly and correct, and men are just who they are in terms of their voice.
Mm-hmm. I do want to take a moment to unpack maybe some other examples, because we've talked about gender a ton, but other examples of ways that we police and attempt to marginalize certain speakers based on their pronunciation or their voice use. You've talked to me before about S.
I think it's important for people to understand is that all the social stuff we attach to language is very cultural and specific and arbitrary. So an interesting example is how if you say, I drove my car in New York City with a heavy New York accent, you might say, I drove my car, like that. And in England, you might say, I drove my car. Same car, no R at the end, but in England, it's prestigious to not have an R. In New York City, it's not. And so the exact same linguistic thing sounds slightly different in British English than New York City English, but the exact same linguistic thing gets evaluated in quite opposite ways in two different communities. So it's not the linguistic thing you should blame. It's just how it is evaluated. So the S thing, there isn't a lot of data. There's a little bit of data out there, but it's all kind of perceptual, but there's a different way to make an S that's still considered not disordered or still considered typical. You can make it with the very tip of your tongue, like S, or with more of the width of the front of your tongue, like S, and one has a higher pitch frequency, S, one has a lower pitch frequency, S. And in our culture, the higher pitch frequency one seems to be attached to femininity somehow. The other one is just not really anything. It's not attached to anything.
Right, because if it's not feminine, it's just normal.
Yes. And so when you hear people trying to sound more feminine or sort of making fun of something feminine, they'll use this high-pitched frequency S. Or sometimes if you hear a man use it, you'll think that he might be gay because male and femininity equals gay for a lot of people in their mindset, not in reality. I mean, it's all very arbitrary. And I think women's voices... And yes, that the sort of idea that if it's not feminine, it's just normal. It's not that it's masculine, it's that it's that's the standard. The masculine, what men do is average. And on some respects, we expect women to do that. And on other respects, if they do it, then they get chastised for doing it. So again, women can't really win when it comes to their voices.
Well, I mean, we are victims. So and we own that status. I mean, we don't technically own it. We're leasing it. We can't own our own status. That would just be wrong, but...
Yeah, and I grew up in the Northwest, so I also grew up thinking that my speech was standard and not accented. the point of that is that sometimes when people grow up in places that have very stigmatized accents, they have what we sometimes call linguistic insecurity. I did not grow up with that. I guess I'm linguistically secure. Usually you'll see a difference between what they find to be pleasant versus correct. So there have been a lot of studies looking at people in the South, and they will talk about a Southern accent being more pleasant than Northern accents, but less correct. Even their own accent. There's a great clip on American Tongues, which is a movie from the 80s about accents, and it really gives people's opinions, very strong opinions about language. And there is some profanity in there, so just for anyone that goes to that, watch out. There's a man at the end who has kind of a Southern accent, and he said he's not necessarily proud of the way he speaks, but he doesn't want to have to make his tongue do the things it has to do to speak correct. And then he says, "Why should I? Everyone knows me." And that's such a great quote because it shows a little bit of linguistic insecurity, but it brings it back to the social. I'm not going to change my voice because people know who I am, and who I am is part of my voice. I know people that have had voice disorders or have gone through strokes or various kinds of incidents have had a hard time, this is not me, this is not my voice. And that sudden disconnect from your identity with how you sound is really traumatic that I really don't think gets addressed very much in the world.
It doesn't.
And I think especially people that have gone through that process should know that when you criticize someone's voice or their language, you're actually criticizing the person.
Yeah.
You're saying you're a bad person. Even if you say, "I don't like your voice," that's still hard not to take personally, but at least the responsibility is on the listener, not the speaker, versus your voice is wrong.
And I'm thinking about code switching too, where if you associate certain dialects or accents with being correct and others with pleasant, and all these different ways we can describe it, and then you stop and think about people who really are essentially forced to code switch to make it because they are so disrespected using the dialect or accent that is part of their ambient culture.
Right, to change from their language of home and the language of the people around them to this language of power that exists in business and education and to some extent religion in our country.
Yeah.
And I would like for people to know that standard American English, the dialect that is standard American English, is linguistically not any different than any of the non-standard versions. It is just another version of English. It's just the one that won. It's the one that has gotten all the power. It's the one that probably the speakers of that variety end up becoming powerful positions. Therefore, they promoted that particular dialect to be the one to win. There's nothing inherently better about it. It was an accident, and it was maybe not an accident, but it just went with the people who had the power. It was their language.
White men.
And now we're still holding everyone accountable to that particular variety that was spoken by white men who had a certain education level, because non-men didn't have access to education like that. So it's kind of like a very archaic system that we're expecting everyone speak in order to be successful in our culture, and that somehow it's better than the others. And in some ways, what you're saying is that the speech of 1700s white educated men is better than anybody else's speech.
And I can think of some practices from the 1700s that we've decided as a culture we don't think are good anymore.
There's something about language that's different. Like, people ignore the connection between language and the person. They ignore that connection until they're confronted with it, usually through a case of prejudice or a case of acquired disorder of some kind, which often leads to prejudice. So we miss the connection between language and people. And all I can tell people is that it's a very real connection. If you've ever had anyone talk about your speech in any sort of negative way, I would be surprised if not everyone takes that personally, because you can't separate that for yourself. So don't pretend you're separating it for someone else.
Yeah.
If you speak negatively about African American vernacular English, some people used to know it as Ebonics. We don't use that term anymore. When people speak very negatively about that variety, in the end, it's just racism. And I know a lot of people that will be very, oh, no, it's not. Well, what are you saying? That you just don't like that variety? Why? Because you don't use it? Why don't you use it? Because you're not black. Therefore, you don't like it because it's black. Racism. End of story, sorry. Soapbox number 7. There's one thing that I think is important for people to understand, and we've been using these terms but haven't really defined them. There's a difference between what I would call creaky voice, which is the use of the lower pitch range, which people are also calling fry, for linguistic purposes. Maybe it's serving a function of declarativeness and assertiveness. Maybe it's part of someone's accent, part of the way they talk, but they can choose to speak in a different way. They can perhaps take a bigger breath and have some of their sentence be in modal voicing that we're used to, or they could get a little breathier if they wanted to. Like, you can go back and forth. And we do it in English for non-linguistic reasons, for those emotions and attitudes, whereas other languages actually do the for phonemic or word differences. Versus vocal fry or glottal fry, which is classified as a disorder, because that's usually a symptom of something else. It's not the cause of a disorder. It is a presentation of other kinds of disorders, from my understanding, and it is not something that anyone is choosing to do and cannot change without some sort of help from therapy. So while we wouldn't necessarily demand therapy for those users of creaky voice, we do want to recognize a population of people that do have a legitimate disorder, whether it be caused from a cyst on the vocal folds or a neurological damage affecting the vocal folds, which can result in vocal fry. They can't get out of it until they have some sort of help, either surgery, which frequently doesn't work from my experience, or some sort of voice therapy, behavioral voice therapy. So I just want people to know that there are these two things that just happen to sound the same, but they are not exactly the same things. So creaky voice as a part of accent, vocal or glottal fry as a part of the disorder side, which makes the question, vocal fry, a difference or disorder, the answer to that is yes. It is both.
Right.
Using creaky voice, no one has found that to cause disorder. No one has found that to harm your vocal folds. And I think that's one of the first things that people go to when they don't like it. They want to find something wrong with it. So they say, oh, you're going to hurt your vocal folds if you keep doing that. No, there's not any proof that that will happen.
Yeah. Good. I'm glad you made the distinction. Yeah. It does not give people license to go up to somebody who's got a creaky voice and ask them what's wrong with them, which I got all the time before I had my sister moved.
How would you like, no one would like someone to come up to you and say, what's wrong with your voice?
It was awful. It was awful to get that. Are you contagious? No. You should have some tea with honey. I can't put honey on my vocal cords because then it goes in my lungs. But have you tried tea? No, I haven't poured tea in my lungs. I haven't. But anyway.
Yes. People amaze me. I think people should love that language, and English in particular is so vibrant and so diverse, and not try to make us all sound the same. So when I hear someone using creaky voice, whether I like it or not, I'm impressed that there is this difference out there in the world that I don't do, but someone else does, and we can both communicate in English still fairly successfully, and I just have to leave all of my baggage at the door and want to really communicate with another individual. And once you do that, you can talk to anyone. You can get through any accent. You just have to put in the time.
If you've made it all the way through this episode and still feel like creaky fry voice is some strange phenomenon that only young women use, I want to introduce you to 48 seconds of men creaking on the radio. It's an excerpt from Panoply Media. Producer Anne Hepperman created this remix as part of Slate's Culture Gabfest, and she says, quote, "Every time we talk about vocal fry, we never hear men's voices. Like climate change, male vocal fry is real," end quote. The song is a remix of The Adventures of Grandmaster Flash on the Wheels of Steel.
You're wondering.
Oh boy, do I.
One for the trouble, two for the time. Come on, girls, let's rock that.
Welcome to the show.
I am bad at planning
in advance.
Juice Box.
Where I met a guy who was close friends with him in Milwaukee. I grew up outside of Chicago.
Separate ground in which you may want to intervene.
Man, sometimes I really drop the ball.
What has been going on with Reddit?
Hitting the heavy bags, doing the sit-up.
You might actually even frame this as helping the garage owner to avoid liability.
This is not something that I have a specific tweet for.
For the next 5 weeks.
And the question I think you're wondering is, why?
Give back those fries, guys!
In all the talking we've done about gender bias and policing women's voices, I do want to put out there one more nuance, and that's bodies. If you have a pointy Adam's apple, larger vocal folds, and a certain length of your vocal folds that actually close when you use your voice, there's a chance you will have a voice on the deeper range and that there will be some natural roughness to your voice. If you added in some creak to your voice, it might not be as noticeable than if you had a very smooth, high-pitched voice to begin with. All that to say that often men's creaky voice is in some ways less apparent than women's, partly because we expect men to have rough, low voices and women to have high-pitched, smooth voices that resonate in their face and heads, not their throats, like this. Head resonance of my voice versus throat resonance of my same voice. One is my talking in a big room voice, and the other is a microphone half an inch from my face voice, even though I'm really trying to use the same voice in both places. Oh well. One more detail about our bodies and our minds. Most of the time, we don't know exactly what we're doing. This isn't laziness. It's part of the reality where most of our brain activity happens below our awareness level. And a lot of what we do with our bodies does too, especially as we multitask or our minds wander. I've told people about this episode and have folks ask me what fry is. I tell them, and without one hint of irony or apparent awareness, they will say, "Ew, why would anyone talk like that?" Sometimes we choose a language or voice style to match other people's to form a bond with them. Sometimes we take on a speaking style without realizing it. Sometimes we aim for a style and perceive that we've hit it, but other people think we didn't. Bottom line is that I do not believe anyone should be shamed for it ever. There is no universal human truth of a good voice or good language, so everyone needs to simmer down about it and let the people creak in peace. You have been listening to Bread and Roses on KBOO Portland. Many thanks again to our engineer Adam and Evening News and Public Affairs Director Kanan Schlesinger. We always welcome new collective members, and if you're interested in joining us as a producer, host, or engineer, no experience necessary, please contact KBOO's volunteer coordinator at volunteer@kboo.org or reach out to us at breadandroses@kboo.org. You can connect with us on the KBOO website, kboo.fm/breadandroses, like us on Facebook, KBOO Bread and Roses, and we are on Twitter at Bread Roses Radio. We're going out tonight with Beyoncé's Formation, which is a great song and incredible video. It's a great example of contemporary use of creaky voice in singing. Please enjoy it. Thanks for listening, everyone.
What happened at the New Orleans? I'm back. I'm popular, the man.
Y'all haters corny with that Illuminati mess. Paparazzi catch my fly and my cocky fresh. I'm so reckless when I rock my Givenchy dress. I'm so possessive, so I rock his rock necklaces. My daddy Alabama, mama Louisiana. You mix that Negro with that Creole, make a Texas Bama. Sauce in my bag. Swag.
Ooh, yeah, baby. Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. I like that.
I did not come to play with you.
I came to slave, Steve. I like cornbreads and collard greens, Steve. Oh, yes, you best believe it.
Y'all haters corny with that Illuminati mess. Paparazzi catch my fly and my cocky fresh. I'm so reckless when I rock my Givenchy dress. I'm so possessive, so I rock his rock necklaces. My daddy Alabama, mama Louisiana. You mix that Negro with that Creole, make a Texas Bama. Sauce in my bag, swag. I see it, I want it, I stunt yellow, want it, I dream it, I work hard, I grind till I own it, I twirl on the middles, albino alligators, a panino with a cedo, sipping Cuervo and no chisa. Sometimes I go out, I go out, I go hard, I go hard. Get what's mine, hey, what's mine? I'm a star, I'm a star, cause I slay, I slay.
This is KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of People's Sanctuary, Saturday, April 8th at 7 p.m. at the Artist Repertory Theater in Portland. People's Sanctuary features performances by Amenta Abioto, Mike Crenshaw, Solomon Starr, Black Butterfly, Alexis Kennard, and Michelle Strong. Again, that's at People's Sanctuary, Saturday, April 8th at 7 p.m. at the Artist Repertory Theater.